Angel mystic Atira was born with an amazing gift. Atira has seen and talked with angels and her spirit guide for as long as she can remember. And now she connects you with spirit as the angels answer your questions on past lives, passed over loved ones, dreams, relatives, workplace, and spiritual experiences. Atira is an Edgar Cayce Foundation handpicked psychic and is featured in The Days of Wonder by G.W. Hardin. Atira's magical, uplifting, worldwide readings are just $100 for 45 minutes, which includes an audio tape. Email angelreadings@angelscribe.com. That's angelreadings@angelscribe.com for an appointment, or go to Atira's website at angelscribe.com. For metaphysical, straight talk from the heart, it's Atira, Angel Mystic.
Welcome to Metaphysical Straight Talk from the Heart. I'm your host, Atira, and as you can tell, every time you interview somebody that has to do with spirits, guess what? You have technical difficulties. I'm excited today about the show because I'm so happy to have Darren, who is the president and director of Whisper, which is Washington State Paranormal Investigators and Researchers. And he has so much knowledge that he's bringing to the show today. We talked last show a lot about ghosts and hauntings. So now we have the really technical guy with all the bells and whistles. And so, Darren, welcome to the show.
Well, it's really good to be here, Atira. Thank you for having me. And, in fact, I don't have bells and whistles. Those were the two things that were removed last year.
Well, let's talk about how long has your organization been in existence? And is it related to TAPS?
Whisper was formed in April of 2005, mm-hmm. and there were six of us. So we founded the group. We developed protocols and methods of how we were going to go about doing what we do. And then we opened up the doors for membership. And we are affiliated with TAPS, and we're called TAPS Family Members. Groups from around the United States contacted the Atlantic Paranormal Society, or TAPS, or the folks that are on Ghost Hunters, and asked if we could be affiliates for them. And they picked one group, typically one group, in each state. And we were appointed the group for the state of Washington.
That's exciting. I have to tell you, I really like to watch TAPS. And for those of you who don't know, in my listening audience, TAPS is a show about investigating hauntings that is on, usually, in my area, it's on Sci-Fi. But it's a fabulous show if you get the chance to watch it, because it's not necessarily seasoned people from a paranormal research study scientific thing. These are people who have experiences and then chose to go into their own investigation. So what brought you into this?
It's always been a lifelong fascination with the paranormal. I grew up in Montreal in Canada. I learned English so I could come to the United States. Mm-hmm. And while I was in Canada, we would get all the American programs. We saw the Search for Bigfoot and the Bermuda Triangle and all that type of thing. And it was just so fascinating. And it wasn't as prevalent on TV back then. And so when I moved to Seattle up here in 2000 with my wife, we pursued that. When we went traveling, because I travel a lot, we went to New Orleans and booked ourselves into a haunted bed and breakfast. It said it was haunted on the Internet, so it must be true.
Ah, there you go, the fallacy of the world. Not necessarily is that true.
You're not here to shatter those dreams, are you, Atira?
No, but I really want people that are listening to my show. It's very important for my integrity of my show. This is a teaching show, and mm-hmm. that's one reason I'm having you on, is that I really want people to do their own investigation on things. Don't just take my word, your word, the Internet word. Do homework before you go, so you have a great time. So was it haunted?
It was. Now, this is part of the experience up there has led me to the directions that I've taken within our group. In that when we were there, if you're told that you're in the scariest bedroom, there's a guest book by your bed that tells you about all the people that ran out of your screaming because of the terror that awaits you when the lights are out. So, of course, when the lights go out, you're waiting for just sheer pandemonium. Now, nothing really happened. My wife did feel something sit on the bed with her. But because of the buildup and the expectation, there was no way we could have been disappointed. If a door creaked, it would have immediately just, you know, sent us running out of the room just because of it had built up our anxiety to such an extent. So after that, it was like, you know, if we didn't know it was haunted, would we have had the same experience?
Right, And that's one thing I want to bring up about your group that I found. Now, I did get the chance, thanks very much to the owner of the Stone House Cafe in Redmond, to just be an observer of your group setting up and doing all the stuff, and we're going to talk about all that setup, and have the experience of observing. And so what I chose to do is write down the time and write down what I got, my feelings, unbeknownst to anybody, or what I got is what I call hits or whatever. And so it was interesting, and I really didn't, Renee was very wonderful about not saying what other people had said, you know, whatever other people felt. I said, don't corrupt the reading.
Exactly.
So it was really great, and that's one thing I really admired about you, A, because TAPS on TV, the group on TV, does not have psychics work with them, and you do. And I found that very fascinating, and I liked that you do not tell the clairvoyant psychic, whatever that person chooses to be called, anything. They go in cold, and they basically sense, feel, see whatever they get. They absolutely pretty much tell a second person, and they write it down.
Exactly. Too often I've seen when you have two people that are sensitive in the room, that they begin to feed off of one another by saying, geez, I sense something here. And the other one will, yeah, me too. It's a woman with a dress. And then the next one, yes, it's a green dress. You don't know what is really being picked up or whether it's just competition.
Well, and it's not even that, though. The big thing is, too, is that it's too easy to feed on each other. You get on a roll, you know,
exactly.
Emotional roll. And that's one thing that I do notice with Jan Grant on the other show, and I also observed with your team, is that you usually, if you really get a sense or see something, you tell a third party. You don't just talk among yourselves.
Exactly.
Which is really validation. So let's talk a little bit about the process of this proving, this trying to find documentable proof, because one thing that fascinates me is the equipment that is now available to really research spiritual apparitions, sounds, all of this. So talk about some of the equipment that you use.
And you're right. That is truly amazing that now you look at the technology that's around us, the digitization of electronics, the miniaturization of things. Most people have laptops now where it wasn't even conceivable. And the power of your laptop today is far greater than what NASA used to get the missions to the moon. So that's staggering. So, yes, for leaps and bounds, it's introduced a whole level of technology that becomes affordable for people investigating the paranormal. Now, to say that there are equipment that is specific for paranormal would be misleading. What we do is we take existing tools and meters and technology and see if we can pick up anything that cannot be explained, which sounds strange. You're using a meter to find something you can't find. Because it's not scientifically proven that when a spirit is around that it causes a disturbance in the magnetic field, or whether it causes an increase, whether static electricity is increased, the ion counts, negative or positive. So we bring in different types of equipment that measure different types of things, be it temperature, be it acoustic, or be it electrical that you can't see but can feel.
Yeah, I really felt like that you were almost trying to prove a double-blind experiment in a way. Does the temperature drop the same time the person feels chills?
Exactly.
At least you can, you know, if you have the thermal thermometer.
A thermal imaging camera.
That will work, too. That was absolutely blew my mind. So talk about that for a minute, if you don't mind, the thermal
imaging camera. Everyone's familiar with thermal being temperature, and you've seen on TAPS and the Ghost Hunters, they have those little guns that you point to the wall, has a little red LED light that shines like a laser beam, and they can read the temperature, and there's a spirit coming towards me, it's walking away. Well, that's really not true. You can't see a spirit moving through a thermometer because it only measures the surface that it touches, not the space in between.
Right.
Well, what a thermal imaging camera was, it takes those numeric readings and makes them visual. So a human body is very hot compared to the surroundings. So you will see, if you use these colors, the human will be white, the chairs around will be like a black color, and every temperature in between will be a shade lighter or darker than that.
So one of the things I saw on that show was that someone had sat in a chair, and so by sitting in the chair, it warmed the chair up.
Correct.
So when the person got up and walked away, then when they showed shot the camera at it, there actually showed heat.
Now, we've done experiments with that just to see how sensitive it is. And as you said, we would sit on a chair, we would have the thermal camera pointed to it, and the person would get up. You would see his body heat still there on the chair because it would transfer. Just like, you know, you sit in a cold lawn chair. After a while, it reaches your body temperature, so it's not cold anymore. You can actually see that. And then if you were to walk barefoot across the floor, you would see your footprints trail behind you.
Well, that would be enough to make you have a paranormal experience if you didn't know what was going on.
So the concept is everyone associates a drop in temperature or an increase in temperature in a very localized area as being paranormal phenomenon. So with this thermal imaging camera, we'd be able to see where that cold spot was, even the shape of that cold spot.
Well, in theory, too, often in my research or in what I have read about this, is that often also spirits draw from the humans to help make their manifest happen. You know, if you read things from the 1800s, spiritualists they'll often talk about the ectoplasm forming is often drawn, or they draw on human, the electromagnetic fields or human energy. So would that make that particular camera go cold, you know, show cold or hot?
That would depend on what the transference of energy would cause, whether it would cause it to heat up or to drop in temperature. But it would be able to detect either one, and you would be able to see the trail in between if there was, in fact, a temperature-energy trail between the two. And that's some of the theories that, unfortunately, haven't been proven one way or the other. There are many paranormal groups that feel very strongly towards one theory versus the other, but I haven't seen irrefutable proof that EMF is disrupted or that temperature drops are exactly correlated to paranormal phenomenon. And that's the difficulty in this field, is trying to develop a correlation. If it happens once, it doesn't make it, you know, I've learned a long time ago, never say always and never say never.
But the great thing is that these kinds of tools are giving us a greater opportunity for documentation, of beginning to compile something that may show consistency, there's consistently a pattern. Because really that's all science is a collection of data.
It's a collection of data and repeatability of that data that you can achieve the same result if you duplicate the experiment over and over again. And so that's what we are trying to do. When we first went into this, it was all about the collection of data. Cold, clinical, we're going in, we're taking meter readings, we're taking temperature readings, we're coming out, we're going to look at those results. But behind these stories, the instance where we went to the Stonehills Cafe with Renee, she wasn't in peril or in fear of what was happening. It was just an interest.
A curiosity.
Exactly. There are many places we go into where it is, these people are going to sell their home. They're in fear for the lives of their children, mostly not because of the activity that's happening, but because the fear of the unknown. They don't know what is happening. They cannot relate it to things that they can relate to. So they call us. So we're going in with our clinical readings, our little white lab coats, and going through their home. And it hit me. These people need help. They don't need readings. So that's where the psychics really shine on our investigations. And they help obtain that the person walking up and down the staircase, it's not, and before I say the word demon, depending on your religious upbringing, anything that's a spirit, in some cases, is considered evil. Other religions, a spirit can be good as well as it can be bad.
Well, the bad thing, too, is that with hauntings, with anything that is beyond someone's known understanding, the fear factor sets in. And so that's one thing I saw very much that your clairvoyant did, is she really said, these are the things I've got, or the hits I've got, and this is what I feel is being relayed. And really belayed any fears. If there was, Renee, like you said, didn't happen to have any.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly for those that do, I think would be very, and they were very, that's one thing I want to say about this group. They're incredibly professional. And I do want to say your website before I forget. It's WSPIR.com. So you're definitely going to want to check that out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So thank you. Charlotte, the psychic that you met, is wonderful, and she is equally wonderful when the people are distressed. And if you find out that banging on the wall is not the end of civilization as you know it, but perhaps it's your aunt that had passed away, and she's trying to communicate with you in one of the few ways she can. And knowing that that's what it is, people have a sense of almost, you know, that's almost nice. That's wonderful. And they no longer want to sell their home. Very rarely have we been asked to clean or clear a house, which are terms I'm not really fond of. But I really feel that everything we do is with respect, be it for the homeowner, business owner, or the spirit that's involved.
One thing that really impressed me, because you know I've been in this biz a long, long time, is that Charlotte went out with your group and you asked permission to go into the house. You mm-hmm. asked permission of spirit to go in and find out what was going on, to ask questions. Totally, totally respectful. Because the truth is, 90% of the time, they're trying to communicate. They're not trying to scare people.
That's exactly right. And it's our misinterpretation of that form of communication that just instills a fear.
Right.
And
well,
so we're big on the knowledge and education to help reduce that fear. Mm-hmm. So through understanding, your fear will go away.
Absolutely. And the truth is, you've got to remember, when they become etherical, they aren't communicating necessarily verbally.
Mm-hmm.
90% of spirits communicate through telepathic or, you know, building electromagnetic energy to make those thumps and bumps.
Exactly. And from what I feel, it's also the person that they're trying to communicate with, the living host, as to what are their sensitivities. Because you can have 15 people that are sensitive, and each one has a different type of sensitivity, be it hearing or vision or sight or even scent or touch. And each person will see the same thing in different ways. So I wonder whether a haunting is really just when a spirit is interacting with someone who is sensitive and doesn't even realize their sensitivity.
Well, that's what I believe. I believe absolutely spirits come to everybody. I mean, they're around us all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how they get somebody's attention is trying to use something that makes sense or will get their attention that they can't ignore anymore. Let's talk a little bit about electronic voice phenomena.
EVP.
Thank you. Because we hear a lot about that now.
Yeah, it became pretty popular with the movie White Noise.
I know, I missed
the Michael Keaton movie. And they worked with a group called AAEVP, the American Association of EVPs.
Mm-hmm.
They basically supplied the EVPs that they used in the movie. In fact, most of the EVPs were true.
But I want to say something when we do this, too, is please know that 90% of TV and films are to sensationalize and to scare and to, you know, that's part of their M.O. So,
yeah, they're there to entertain.
Yeah.
They're not educating.
Because really, most of the time when I've worked with spirits, they're not, like, trying to torture you and scare you.
No,
please.
And we have received EVPs that will be get out, but without understanding the context, it sounds very forbidden. Oh, my God, get out. When in actual fact, it's just the spirit, that's his home. He's lived there all his life, mm-hmm. and you are impeding on his property as far as he's concerned, so he's asking you to leave.
Or they could even sometimes be saying, get out of the depression, get out of your emotions, get out of your fear.
Exactly.
I've heard that, too.
Yes.
So what we do with EVPs, fractured messages.
Yeah, so what we do on investigations, all the investigators carry a digital voice recorder, another leap of technology, where it's digitally recording voice. And they walk around, and they'll try to capture you. They say, are you in the room with me? Leave a pause to see if it will be recorded. Now, at the end of the investigation, upon playback of our digital recorders, we can sometimes get a reply to the questions asked. And oftentimes, we get a voice that's on the tape that is not related to a question, but it's a voice that was added within a conversation going on between two of the investigators. Now, what we've done because of this EVP phenomenon, when we go into an investigative place like we did the Stonehouse as a perfect example, we connected 8 different high-quality microphones that you would use in a recording studio. So it's very low noise level, so it can pick up the slightest sound, and it picks it up accurately. It doesn't distort the sound in any way. At the end of the investigation, if I picked up an EVP at 922, we will go to this master recording of the 8 microphones and go to 922 and listen to what was being heard in the home at that instant. Because my EVP, as what happened in the Stonehouse, what we heard as a door opening and closing at the back turned out to be a compressor coming on and off in the kitchen of the Stonehouse. It didn't sound like a compressor, but upon hearing it with the high-quality microphones, you could hear the compressor come on in timed intervals. Sometimes it sounded like steps. Sometimes it sounded like a door opening and closing because of that compressor. And that was the majority of the hauntings that the staff had heard were those types of things. So So we've concluded that a lot of the acoustic phenomenon was, in fact, just the compressor being heard in different rooms in different areas.
Which is important, though. Which is really important.
And we definitely don't go in trying to discount hauntings.
Right.
We're trying to go in and find truth.
But I think what you disprove is as important as what you do prove, because sometimes, you know, when people are afraid, now they happen not to be, it gives peace of mind to whoever is living there, because sometimes, like you said, they happen to have an unusual refrigerating system, because I think it's a commercial.
Yes.
So certainly you're not found, you're probably here in your home at home, you know? So it is interesting to be able to, what is something that just being misdirected or confused about, and then what can't be explained.
Mm-hmm.
Because there certainly was emotional hits or feelings that several of your investigators had that jived with other investigators' versions of it. So
to me was the confirmation of those psychic hits, because one of the hardest things to prove is a psychic feeling. So in the case of the Stone House, which is an excellent example on so many different levels, is I knew that you were sensitive. And we had never met. It sounds like we're setting up a trick about to occur. You've never met me, have you? And I asked you to just write things down, which you had been doing anyway. And I didn't tell our psychic who you were. In fact, I asked him not to communicate with you while you were there. And at the end of the investigation, Charlotte had her notes written down by her investigator, which was by her observer, which was Jill, my wife. And then you had your notes. And when we compared them, there were so many hits that were the same. And there was no way, there was nothing, there's always that disbelief that, I'm picking up the letter B, and then you can see the person reacting, and you can say, it's you, and your favorite color is, and you kind of go through a series of colors. So it's always open to suggestion whether the person is being manipulated by what the person is saying. So that's why we write it down, and then it's just a replay of what they've already seen, which takes away that element of suggestion. And you picked up things that there was no way, there was nothing in the surroundings that would have indicated there was a woman walking around back there. And if it was just you picking up a woman and the other psychics picked up something totally different, it doesn't discount your readings, but it doesn't confirm them.
Right.
The fact that Charlotte picked up on that woman as well. And unbeknownst to you and Charlotte, when we did the assessment, that psychic also picked up on that woman. So that's three hits of exactly the same thing in exactly the same area by three independent people.
Yeah, that's what I call a double-blind experiment.
Yep.
Because one doesn't know what the other one's doing.
Exactly.
And I think it's fascinating to see that kind of data come back. And that's why it was so fun for me to be in on that night, because, you know, it's just nice to have something come out like that and have those comparisons. Go, okay, you know, obviously there is something here we're really, really getting on the same wavelength.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very, very fascinating. It was incredible also to see the equipment. Now, I have to tell you, this is a good 45 minutes, hour setup time in this place for you to set up all the mics, you know,
exactly,
all the equipment. I mean, it's an incredible amount of equipment, and you had, I think there was Chris, and I don't remember the female in the end, Peter?
There was Chris, and there was Peter, and there was Erica.
Yeah, so that was that's four technicians.
Correct.
Plus Jill, the facilitator, transcriber,
yeah.
And so it's really quite an
mm-hmm.
yeah, quite an ordeal to put it all together.
And we had a small team there because of the size of the location was relatively small.
And plus it was at least three hours.
And we will go longer. Mm-hmm. Part of the thing is in the interview process we'll determine when the activity occurs most often, and we want to be there when it happens.
And the truth is there was a whole interview process before I ever came into this. I mean,
mm-hmm.
We're just talking the night of the event, of the setup, and how you proceed. And
it's not a trivial thing. There's a lot involved. There's a lot of dedicated volunteers in Whisper that just give so much time to it.
Now, the Stone House was unusual in that you went to them, correct?
Yes. Now, I'm the cold technical guy. Mm. However, I would be the first to say that I'm oftentimes guided to what I do. And I just, before I would just deny that, you know, it's like the little kid thing, you know, you want to have an ice cream, so just have it. It's like, no, just because I want one doesn't mean I should get one. Well, I play in a band in Seattle, as if I don't have enough activities going on, and I was looking for venues where I could play. And the Stone House was a new cafe that had just opened. and I didn't know the size of it, and a lot of cafes now have live bands in the evenings. Well, when I read the description of the cafe, it was built in like the early 1900s by this man, Wiley, who built it by hand with the stones from around the area. I thought, if someone put some love into a building that had some attachment, it's some guy who built it by hand with stones from the area. Talk about that. If a place was going to have an attached haunting, that would be it. So I emailed them, just out of the blue, and normally I don't solicit investigations. And I asked, would you be interested in us doing an investigation there? And Renee was delightfully open to have us come down.
It's fascinating, too, now. I know, actually, there is, somebody told me this now, I don't know it for a fact, that there's actually a book on haunted Seattle.
Yes. Actually, several books.
So I'm curious. So are there a lot of haunted places that you've investigated in Seattle? Without breaking confidentiality of clients, of course.
Yes, there are. And there's the popular ones, the Pike Place Market haunting, and now I'm going to draw blanks, the Kalakala is known to be a haunted one, the bead shop inside the Pike Place Market, the Harvard exit is said to be haunted. There are just so many different locations, and that's just the public places. There are so many investigations that we've gone on all over the place, just regular people like you and I, although I think you're pretty spectacular, so that takes you out of the regular people category.
Thanks. But to do some place like an outside haunting would be very difficult, I think, because your equipment's so sensitive.
It makes it a very uncontrolled experiment. But one of the things is electromagnetic energy is generated by man-made devices. Everything that plugs into the wall will generate some type of electromagnetic energy. Now, there's a physiological symptom of people do have an allergy to EMF.
That's fascinating.
If you are hypersensitive to EMF, you can actually have headaches. It could cause visions from the corner of your eye. You could have the feeling that someone's standing behind you. It could play many symptoms.
Maybe I'm not psychic. No, actually, I really believe that because I really have a thing. I can't go near high wires.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if we get near substations, Mary Ellen will vouch for this. I actually really have to have my spirit guide kind of shut things around me because it gives me an instant headache.
And I'm wondering if there is a role in that because so many of the symptoms of a haunting are parallel to people that are suffering from hypersensitivity to EMF. And the same thing, there's ultra-low frequency or infrasound, which, you know, you always hear about the whales, the woo, and they're communicating with each other with low frequencies.
Right.
Low frequencies travel effortlessly over great distances. Well, one of their effects is they are felt more than they are heard. And there was a lab in England where, because of the way the duct work for the air ventilation was aligned, there was too many, the duct was so long. You know how you blow over the top of a Coke bottle and you get that whistling noise?
Mm-hmm.
And the more Coke that you drink, the lower the tone.
Right.
Well, imagine the wind passing over a mountainside or blowing through air ducts that are hundreds and hundreds of feet long. It would be a super low frequency. Well, people that went into the lab where the end of this vent was always felt like they were in a haunted situation. They felt paranoia. It actually made the liquid in their eyes vibrate. They couldn't see it, but it would make blurs and shadows and things move about, and a feeling of being watched. So all the symptoms related to what a classic haunting are, and they were all related to infrasound. And so mountainsides are open to that. If there's mining in the area, there's a chance that an open mine and the wind going down the mountainside could facilitate that low-frequency infrasound.
So this makes me curious now, because I have always believed that there is a, like, energy web. And they've kind of proven that because there's actually some, Greg Braden's been talking about this kind of a net, that neuro netting that they think psychics actually surf.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm really curious if that's what we do, if we hook into that certain, like, vibrational sense and then just surf it to find the information we find. So it's kind of interesting. I'd never heard this information before. Absolutely fascinated.
I've heard something similar, like the ether, that all spirit is all into one big body of energy and that we can tap into it. And if you can, wonderful. And if you can't, it's still there and your energy is contributing to it. And that's where I think a lot of people felt that EMF, it's electromagnetic, it's in the electrical spectrum, it's in the magnetic spectrum, that when there's paranormal phenomena, when you're tapping into it, you are disrupting the Earth's magnetic field or a magnetic field, and that by seeing a fluctuation of energy would indicate either you're blocking it or you're drawing from it or you're adding to it. So we always look for fluctuations in EMF when doing investigations, just in case there is a correlation.
Well, the interesting thing with using that EMF meter, which is a meter that really kind of registers, if I'm understanding this correctly, is electromagnetic output. So if you put it next to a electrical box, it's going to spike, correct?
Yes, in the simplest sense, it will.
I mean, I'm just trying to give my audience a little understand your little techo for us.
Yeah, and actually, just to make it simple, the reason for EMF meters was in the telecommunication industry. Do you remember the scare how cell phones were thought to have caused cancer?
Right.
These EMF meters were used to detect how much energy was radiated from a cell phone. So the antenna of your cell phone would radiate energy. This little meter would go off when a cell phone was transmitting. Well, the same meter, when put beside, you know, your charger for charging up your cell phone, for,
right,
they're called wall pigs, the big black box with the metal probes inside you plug into your wall, you detect a heck of a lot of EMF off of those.
So everybody unplug those.
And actually, they're also called vampires and totally unparanormal. They are drawing energy from your house grid, even when you're not charging your phone.
You know, and that's very important. Oprah had that on TV, and bless her heart, about that is very not a good thing. So you should not leave any of your shredders, your cell phones, all those things with those kinds of box things.
Exactly, but within reason, because you still have your alarm clocks that you have to keep plugged in.
Right. I think, you know, we have to really be conscious of things. But I know from my work, and I've started asking other clairvoyants because I'm working on a book. And for me, like, we went through 9 portable phones in my house till we found out it was me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as long as I was gone and wasn't using them, they'd hold their battery.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, it was weird because we kept taking them back and getting a different one and, you know, upgrading to the next set and everything. And so obviously it's somehow how I'm physically, energetically wired affects the battery in those portable phones.
And we've had many investigations where we've gone in with equipment with fully charged batteries, or not fully charged, but just new batteries that died unexplainably. We did work with ABC's Nightline, and when the audio crew, everyone had a wireless mic connected to them, their wireless pack died. And when I queried the technician who's in charge of the audit, I said, have you ever had one of these battery packs die? And he said, no. And he's been doing this for like 10, 12 years. So it was just definitely something to add to the file of unexplained. And it could have just been a bad cell within his battery pack, and it reached, because batteries have a life cycle, especially
right,
rechargeable.
Right, absolutely.
After 1,000, 2,000 cycles, they don't hold the charge anymore.
But it's interesting, because I've also seen that happen on the TAP show.
Mm-hmm.
Go in with a full battery, and boom, all of a sudden it's drained. And again, something you can't prove, but it makes you maybe make a note and go, what is it? What is going on here? Because the theory is, if you read from the 1800s, especially from a lot of the spiritualist things and Society of Research, Psychical Research in England, and also they have had a version in America, a lot of times they felt like that there was draining of energy. And so it's sort of one of those things that's been around long enough in semi-research that they could reach the level in the 1800s, 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're sort of having the technology that could help to, again, get more data.
And one of the challenges, anything you use to detect the current dissipation, but the juice that's in a battery, mm-hmm, any meter that you would use to detect how much is being drained is susceptible to the same force that drained the battery in the first place, so your meter would die.
So you're catch 22. Yeah. You're out of luck. I want to mention your website again, because I know a lot of people are going to go there. Please, if you're having difficulties, if you're having what you think is a haunting, I'm sure that you can email on the website and ask some questions, get some, you know, better understanding to your specific situation. So it's WSPIR.com. And I really want to say now, you actually, would you explain a little more about your organization? Because I think there might be some people who would like to become part of it and be involved.
What we are, it's a volunteer group. So we're not a corporation, we're not a business. Like I said, we started with six founding members, and then we allowed people, we have meetings every second Sunday within the King County Library in the state of Washington. For those who aren't in the state of Washington, I guess King County doesn't mean too much. And if you go to our website, you can see the calendar of where we are having our meetings and the time in which we are having the meetings. The meetings are open to anyone who wishes to attend. We have speakers come in, or we ourselves give presentations on various aspects of paranormal phenomenon, as well as just simple classes on photography, because so often people have photographs that they think have paranormal phenomenon in them, and then we show people that it's not paranormal, it's just either mechanical or the settings that you're using on your camera. And we have approximately 50 members to date. We charge $30 membership fee, and that's for the year. And that entitles people who are members get trained on the various regimes that they want to be trained in, be it the observer, the interviewer, the administration, the back office of getting all the data together and the technical aspect, also the techs, and then lead positions of team management. And so we teach all that to our members before they're allowed to go on investigations. If it's a larger investigation, we'll allow someone who's never been on one to follow and kind of apprentice. See what.
And thank you for letting me sit in on one. It was great. I want to bring this up because I really think for anybody that's in my listening audience, if you're not in Seattle, Washington, certainly, I'm sure if you go to the website, they will help you find someone in your area, because I know that there are different groups all over the United States.
Correct.
So if you want, it's a good connection place. The other thing that I think I would encourage is anyone who's a beginning or budding clairvoyant to go to these kind of meetings and get validation and get information on how to run this kind of equipment is only going to make you stronger in your field, because we are going that way. If you really want to be in the metaphysical field and be a very credentialed, documented clairvoyant psychic, the more you know about every aspect of the work, the better off you are. And so this kind of training would be really invaluable to get, the knowledge that you have and get to see some of the pictures and things that you guys have documented, the voices and everything, because then you get a better idea of when you're on your own and these things happen. So let's talk about orbs, though. I want to talk about orbs because everybody gets excited about orbs.
Yeah. Orbs is one of the nemesis of most paranormal groups because of the controversy. From a technical standpoint, when you're taking a picture, you've got the lens, you've got the flash just above the camera lens, and you've got the objects in front of you that you're taking a picture of. Now, the picture that comes on your computer is two-dimensional. You can't see depth. If you see someone in the frame and you see they're behind the kitchen table, well, then you know they're at least behind the kitchen table. Now, most orbs appear in the frame, but they're not behind anything. They're over a person's shoulder. They're not behind a shoulder. They're just a circle that's on a two-dimensional plane. You don't know how deep in the frame that orb is. And most often, that orb is just a microscopic speck of dust that has been illuminated when your flash went off in your camera. And if you look at your camera, the flash and the lens are very close together. So if you imagine a little piece of dust mote just floating, you remember the old days in school? You'd be sitting there watching the professor give a lesson with his projector, that going off in the background, and you'd see all the dust motes floating within the beam of light?
Unfortunately, yes.
And most people do. Well, those dust motes, if that dust mote was right at the sweet spot of just at the lens where it could see the flash and it could see the lens, when you take a picture, that dust mote becomes an orb. It's very close to the lens, so that means it's not in focus, because your camera's looking at about 6 feet in front of you. Well, this orb is so close, it's totally out of focus, so now it's blurry because it's out of focus. Because it's so blurry, it's circular, and because it's so wide and circular and blurry, it's transparent, so you can see through it.
So because obviously, they're pretty much explainable, the orbs.
Correct.
When you're doing investigation, what would you say is the most thing that you see, like one of the episodes of Taps, they have nobody's in the room, the camera's running, and a chair moves across the floor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, certainly, you know, that's pretty unexplainable because nobody was there.
Yeah, exactly. And that's very compelling in terms of evidence that you'd have on video, but it just leaves you open to, well, was the room really empty? And
in this particular one, it was a lighthouse. I think pretty much it was empty.
Yeah.
You know,
I remember that one.
But we also have another incident where he was in the hotel where The Shining was shot.
Yeah.
And where the glass breaks.
Yeah, the glass broke and the closet door would open and then close.
They had voices.
Yeah, that was great. I think that was a really good investigation.
Isn't that the ultimate high for an investigator to have that kind of...
have something on video.
Because the door opened and closed.
Yes.
It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was great. And I just wish that... I would have thought if it you know, armchair quarterback, if it were I would have moved the camera to point at the door of the closet and see inside the closet at the same time so I'd see both sides.
Well, I would have liked, because that was such a dramatic experience,
and
I'm sure they were as hooked as we are sitting in our living room. I would like to have seen them when they went back to, again, put the glass down,
mm-hmm.
have the camera, like more than one camera in that room.
Yeah.
To me, I would have made that the hot spot, you know, and let's do, you know, more than one camera and a closer sound system in the closet.
Exactly. And the horrible thing is when people call
us... And this is not criticism of the show.
Oh,
I love
not
the
at all. It's an armchair quarterback.
But this is what you learn. You learn, oh, that worked, let's do this, you know. In that same particular... God, I cannot think of the name of the hotel, can you?
The Stanley.
Thank you, the Stanley. In that same hotel now... I have to tell you, when they were in the basement hearing the little girl's voice,
mm-hmm.
Man, that was like to me, because I heard exactly voices before it came on in the show.
Wow.
And that, like, I went, uh-oh, what, you know, wait a minute here. And it was exactly the same kind of thing that I heard. And
mm-hmm.
so when I heard it, when it came on the show, I was like, whoa, you know, to me, I wish they would have pursued even that. Put a microphone, put something there.
And that's where we've learned that the audio thing is just so important. We try to blanket the home with audio so we don't miss anything. And unfortunately, if you called me and said, I've got a specter that runs up and down the stairs every night, at least, you know, a week every month,
right.
And we go and we say, Friday night we're going to be at your house, what are the chances that...
Where did that specter go?
Yeah, what's the chances it's going to happen while we are there for maybe 4 hours?
Right.
You
well, I also think, you know, two things can happen. Spirit can be curious and be drawn to seeing what's going on, or they're repelled by too many different vibrations in the house. They get disturbed by
mm-hmm.
too much, too. But I would love to see Taps go back to Stanley and do another follow-up, because they actually had one show, and they did go back for Halloween, of course.
Yeah.
TV loves that. But it was really interesting, the phenomena that did happen. And especially, I really like Grant and... guy's name.
Yeah, don't ask me.
I know, I just went blank. Jason, Grant and Jason.
Yes, thank
because
you.
They very much are skeptics. They believe, but they're also there to go, let's not just go off the deep end because we had something brush against us.
Exactly, because they've had personal experiences. The only, and I don't want to call it a criticism, just an observation, because I know it's TV, so they have to make it as watchable as
possible. Well, and we don't know
how
much they chopped this up for them either.
Exactly. It's the helping of the clients. It's all about gathering the evidence.
It is. I really believe that.
And that's why I just have that, maybe I'm hypersensitive because I see the lack of, that I want to really help the people that are encountering this.
Right.
There's nothing worse than getting a phone call of someone that is just terrified. I had a call just a couple of days ago, someone who hasn't slept for about a week now because there's a spirit that follows him. And
by the time someone calls you, they've already... had more than just one little hit or experience.
Exactly. And
you know,
the first thing people say to me is, I'm not crazy.
Right.
But it's not with a period. It's kind of like with a rise of their voice, I'm not crazy.
Like, could you confirm I'm not?
Exactly. And just to have someone who will listen to them and say, you know what, I've experienced paranormal phenomenon. I know exactly what you mean. You just see this wave of relief pass upon their face. And then anything we do after that is just uncovering more layers of truth for them until they're at a point where it's like, and because of that, we're we're meeting people at an emotionally vulnerable time because of what they're going through. When things are better, we develop very, very close relationships with the people that we've done investigations for.
Well, one of the things I think about your group is it's investigation, but it's also education.
Yes.
So that is taking the scare out of woo-woo. Today you happen to be talking to pretty much a metaphysical group, you know, through my radio show. But certainly when you're on the air and it's the general public, it's, you know, they have their own, everybody comes to whatever their experience is with different backgrounds. And so what might not scare me, and I just go like, okay, sir, what is that, you know, for someone who is not comfortable with that or has been taught to fear it, they're going to have a, you know, far beyond jerk knee reaction.
Yeah.
And so when you come in and you find out whatever you find out, and you say, okay, here are some books on this. Here are some information on this. So it's not just leaving them and say, bye, I did my reveal, have a nice life. Which, not that TAPS does that, but I'm just saying, you know, they have some place to look and research, to talk to your clairvoyant, to calm down, to get a sense of, okay, they talked to me like I wasn't a nut off the street, and, you know, so there's some real peace brought to this. And certainly having the equipment there, to me, you know, makes it less airy-fairy and more scientific. And I think lot of people need that. A lot of people are ready for the scientific aspect. And one of the reasons I was interested in this is because I saw the potential of the use of some of this equipment in seances, because spiritualists have done seances. And other, not just spirituals, but that happens to be who I'm studying a lot of right now.
Uh-huh.
And so seances have been around forever, and they do have manifestation during those things. So I thought it would be interesting to use the EVP and use the thermometer to see when everybody feels cold in the room, did the temperature really go down, or is this a group hallucination? You know, because you wonder that.
And as a group, I would love to be able to technically prepare a room for you to do a seance in and use a thermal cam to see if there's any thermal changes, EMF meters to see if there's any fluctuation during the proceedings, night vision cameras or infrared cameras, as they're called, to see, because the cameras will be able to see what your eye cannot because it's using light that the eye cannot see. So for us, it will be a pitch black room. For the infrared cameras, it could be very bright.
Right.
And basically film it from a couple of angles and see what really is there to be seen.
Well, I think that is where, you know, that's where I'd like to see some of this go, because I would love to see a group come up with finances to do this, because I know the equipment's not inexpensive. But to actually have a seance room that is wired, for lack of better words, you know, and have a series of them held so you could see what happened. Because I think the more we document it, the less, you know, it'll be able to justify, oh, well, that's, you know, those nuts, those guys over there. But we've suffered through that all our life, right?
Yes, we could de-woo-woo.
Yeah, de-woo-woo, yeah. But because the nice thing is the thermal imaging camera in particular, to me, is going to be a big breakthrough someday for us, because someday it will pick up what we see as clairvoyants. I believe that.
Yeah, if it's thermally based, it definitely will.
Yeah.
And we were so fortunate to have a thermal imaging camera within our group.
That is fabulous. They do. I want to tell you, they do take donations and they do fundraisers. So if you like what you heard, Darren does speak at places, and they present some of their show the equipment, do things like that. So they're open to that. So is there a number you want to give them to if they want to contact you, or just through the website?
Through the website, there is a number, and that number is 425-246. 1104.
And they can contact you through that number if they have a ghost or a haunting going on.
That is correct.
And
that is the whisper number.
Good. And again, the website is wspir.com. And Darren, thank you so very much for being my a ghost whisperer today and the technical guy behind all of it, because, you know, the technical part is not really what I do. But it was great to get so much valid information that really helps in the research that I really believe is the next level of spirituality for us, And really, you know, I really believe in the next 5 years we're going to have really valid documentation on a lot of the things that have been just, oh, well, we don't know.
Definitely, because everything in the paranormal world has been a personal experience. It's a physical experience of individuals, and I want to bring some technical accountability to that as well.
But I also love that you include the clairvoyance, because that's one thing TAPS does not.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's probably because they've really fought to be, you know, I think for a long time, if you were in paranormal studies, you didn't work with clairvoyance because, you know, that was there was a fraud factor and the what if they're not the real thing factor.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, certainly all of us have had bad press in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
Bless the hearts of people like Edgar Cayce and Uri Geller and all those people who went out on that limb with Shirley to get us some validation. So thank you again so much for being on my show. I
welcome.
Hate to wrap up, but, you know, time goes like a heartbeat while we're on the air.
And if there's one thing I can say is if anyone plans on doing an investigation on their own or visit a public place that's known to be haunted, always ask permission.
Please, please. I'm really glad you brought that up.
Mm-hmm.
Do not do this on your own until you go and get the opportunity to ask more questions. Search the web. Search the websites. Most of these organizations are very open to sharing. Because if you go to a haunted place and you don't know what you're doing, you can have a really bad experience.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a fearful experience. And, you know, I gotta say, sometimes spirits follow you home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unintentional. But you feed on their fears, and if it's a lower energy of an entity that likes that fear, you could get, you know, really afraid and really, you know, not to scare you, but it's the truth. Things
mm-hmm.
can get attached to fear-based stuff. And that's one reason we don't advocate the Ouija board. People get scared with that. So it's a great information that you just gave. Please, if you're going to try it on yourself and you're curious and you're going to take your little recorder off to this local cemetery, check things out, because I got to tell you, a lot of cemeteries, if you're out in the cemetery at night, they will arrest you.
Yeah, after dusk, they're closed.
Yeah, they're closed, and it's illegal to go there, so you don't want to go to jail because you're ghost busting.
Yeah, Whisper has obtained permission for several cemeteries in Washington State just
it's
for that
really
purpose.
It's really important not to know before you go.
Yeah.
You know, it's important. So, also, I want to mention that I am going to be in Orlando, Florida, teaching a workshop with G.W. Harden, of the author of The Messengers, and we're looking forward to that adventure. And please remember to let your heart light shine, to light your way and the way for others. Until next week, remember to stay wrapped in the wings of angels. Bye.
Bye, too.